Pat, about passing back through this part of the Deathlands. I do intend to get up to Front Royal, but not using this route. It's too dangerous without enough ammunition. Even if these stickies are wolfheads from Lester's Mutie Army, there's probably plenty more farther up in the hospital complex.
Jack rocked back and forth on his booted heels, impatiently.
So, we go back down?
Yeah, let's go back to the gateway. I'd just as soon get the hell out of this pit of a stairwell, and on our way to another locale, before we get any more surprises.
No one disagreed, and they all fell in step with Ryan as he took the relighted torch from Christy and led the way back down. At the bottom, the landing was well illuminated by the strip lighting shining through the hole from the chamber where the cryogenic complex and Matt Tran's unit were both housed. Ryan extinguished the torch and placed it back against the desk where they'd found it. From this side, the hole remained an inelegant affair in itself, blown open previously by the wild-eyed Alvis Alton during his quest for hidden riches. Alvis's timing had proved to be both a blessing and a curse. He'd been able to assist Ryan and the others when they arrived in the hidden complex through the Matrans unit, but at the same time he'd brought down a horde of stickies with the noise he created when he set off his explosives. They made their way back into the first hallway, and nothing. Past the silver doors leading to the cryo units, the inhabitants of the cylinder-like tombs within sealed away, never to awaken again, their pods having failed at one time or another during their long sleep, causing irreparable brain damage to some, death to others. From the trip taken mere moments before, JB knew that the seemingly daunting maze of rooms and hallways was actually laid out in a simple rectangle shape, and after passing the cryo lab, a suite of empty hospital beds would be next on the agenda. Christy noticed Ryan stifling a yawn and looked at him with her eyes at half-mast while passing the beds.
Sure would be nice to grab some sleep in there, lover. Can't remember the last time I had a good night's sleep. There's a bed in there for each of us and curtains for privacy, and they're large enough to share.
I know. Too bad we can't risk it. I'm about to drop on my feet myself, but it's only a matter of time before another pack of stickies comes across this place. Like I said back on the stairs, I'd just as soon get the hell out of this pest hole and be on my way before that happens.
Sometimes I wonder about the paths we've chosen, but I guess it beats the alternative.
Anything beats the alternative.
The group converged on their final destination, back at the Matran's control room.
Want me to reopen it, Dad?
Go ahead, Dean.
The boy keyed in the universal code of 352, and the vanadium steel door obediently slid upward, allowing them entry into the low-ceilinged room. Wider than tall, the control center for the Matran's chamber remained as white as a Colorado snowfall. A crisscrossing of bold black lines gave the floor a neutral checkerboard pattern. A single desk, also painted white, held a comp unit, keyboard, mouse, and widescreen monitor station. It was the only furnishing in the room. A starburst pattern ran across the nearly black screen. The door, off to the far left, was made of painted wood with a simple bronze doorknob. They stepped through, feeling more secure now, with the first vanadium steel door locked, and walked back into the hexagonal chamber. This Matran's chamber, located beneath the hospital, was the traditional shape, but a low ceiling tapered to a central point, and the taller members of the group had to duck, crossing the center of the room. Groupings of Matran's discs hung overhead, open to the world and close enough to reach up and touch. A smooth floor made of a clear substance held the series of lower Matran's discs, suspended and waiting, as if sealed in lucite blocks. Waiting until all were seated, Ryan closed the chamber door and quickly stepped across to take his place between Christy and Dean. The gray gloominess of the walls increased as the mists from the top of the chamber began their descent, swirling in a mass of growing opaqueness that would soon obscure the room mere instants before unconsciousness would claim them all. Once the Matran's chamber was in full, vibrant bloom, Ryan had to close his eye against the blinding light. For some unknown reason, this chamber was much brighter than the norm, with a piercing bank of white that slid past his eyelid and into the very core of his being. He ducked his head between his knees in an effort to shield his face from the brilliance of the white. The warmth of the light came from all sides, washing down from the ceiling and splashing up from the floor, caressing him in shimmering tones that seemed to be coming from inside instead of outside his body. The thickness of the fog increased, and when combined with the luminance of the chamber, made the haze much more apparent than usual. Mildred snuck a peek before slamming her eyelid shut. She started singing softly while strumming an air guitar.
Purple haze within my brain. acting funny, but I don't know why.
What's with the movements?
JB's eyes squeezed tight to keep out the white light. His spectacles were tucked safely away inside one of the pockets of his leather jacket.
You keep poking me in the ribs with your elbow when you do that.
I'm playing the guitar, JB. Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze. Before your time.
Oh, okay.
Unlike most of the companions, all of whom subconsciously held their breath as the eldritch process of matter transfer began, Mildred always breathed deeply, taking the ion-charged atmosphere down into her lungs. She honestly believed it helped with the dispersal and recalibration of her individual molecules when they were broken down and reassembled on the other side, at their eventual destination. Plus, the deep breathing aided in calming her nerves. Matter transfer was almost routine now, but she still didn't like the process. Too many variables were involved to avoid the eventual happenstance of an error beyond their control. And when that happened, she could only pray it wouldn't be a fatal one.
Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
And then the white was replaced by darkness and blissful unconsciousness. Ryan was dreaming, adrift and helpless in the suspended state between living and dying that the Matrans journey created within the souls of sentient conscious beings. The only way the human mind could hope to effectively survive the experience of total molecular disassembly and reassembly was to reject the reality of what was happening during a jump and enter instead into a waking dream cobbled together of truth and fiction, past and regret. In layman's terms, one could always count on a gateway journey to give a man triple bad nightmares. In Ryan's current case, he was running flat out, putting his back into it, arms pumping, legs straining, running, continuously running. The air in that part of Front Royal tasted electric and sharp, and his young eyes, gave a dark and fearsome aura to everything in sight, alternating their colors between black and blue as a maze of storm clouds raced across the evening sky. The drawbridge was up, so he had to stop before plunging headlong into the moat. His legs flew out from beneath him, and he fell hard to the cobbled surface of the road leading to the drawbridge. Gasping for breath, he quickly examined his lower extremities and gave particular care to his left kneecap, which had suffered the brunt of his sudden landing. The fabric of the trousers was torn away from the knee, revealing shredded flesh and blue blood. Blue blood? The boy thought stupidly, looking at the bodily fluid in numb surprise. He might be royalty of a sort because of his father's position of power in this southeastern pocket of the Deathlands, but unlike some of his relatives, he rarely flaunted the elevated seat he currently held as a son of the late great lord Titus Cotter. And since when did he think of himself as a boy? Suddenly, he heard the sneer of a familiar voice.
There you go again, Ryan, showing off your so-called heritage.
It was a voice that had much of the cadence and timbre of his own, but pitched higher and dripping with thinly veiled envy and hate.
It's time I took a more active role in your future status as a member of the House of Cotter.
Somehow, while Ryan had been examining his injuries, the drawbridge had managed to come whispering down without his noticing. Concentration was a good thing to possess, but shutting out his surroundings would be the death of him yet. He had already decided the wounds and bruises were superficial, but now they were completely forgotten as he took in the sight revealed by the dropped drawbridge. Harvey Cotter loomed before him in all of his terrible, crooked glory.
Hello, brother. Time to die.
And suddenly, Ryan was a child again, a boy of 15, lost and injured in the cold, betrayed by the very blood he shared with his brother. There would be no pleading of familial ties for mercy in this battle challenge. The same brother who had overseen the murder of their father wasn't the sort to grow misty-eyed over family. Harvey was grotesquely fat, poured into the finest silken robes his subjects could buy, with a half-crown studded with jewels atop his lumpen potato head. Hanging at the sides of his jiggling hips were twin Colt pistols of shining metal, in tooled holsters crafted by the finest leathersmiths in the Deathlands, and paid for with money smeared in blood. But fat, evil Harvey hadn't drawn either of the small-caliber blasters. In his right hand, he held a blade, double-edged with a sharp point. Ryan felt his left eye start to throb, pulsating in time with his heartbeat, a pulse that was increasing in speed. His legs felt leaden, paralyzed with fear. He knew he wasn't afraid of his brother. What terrified this